welcome to the podcast, our first ever Bad Gay for a Day, Mr. Arturo Esteve. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
We're happy to have you and I'm happy to have your support. We were just talking off mic about the Oscars. We didn't talk any about Drag Race, but we will get into that.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to know more about you. And right now you're calling from the Netherlands. You are 6 hours ahead of us, correct? Or at least where I am. I'm in Pittsburgh. Why did you move to the Netherlands? Because you just said you formerly lived in D.C. Have you hopped around a lot? Or how did that come to be?
So I was born and raised in Argentina. I lived there until I turned 20.
Okay.
And right after turning 20, I moved to the U.S. For school.
Nice.
I was in Virginia first, and then I went to D.C.
Oh, Virginia,
and then
nice.
For school also, I moved to the Netherlands. And that was, almost 3 years ago.
Wow.
2016. And then it was kind of like, I had one of those moments where I don't know if what I studied and everything is really what I want to do.
Of course.
And then I got really tired of moving around.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of just settling here and figuring it out.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like so many, because I just turned 33 and a lot of my, I feel like it's, how old are you right now?
29.
Okay, yeah, I feel like that's like the prime age. Like RuPaul, of course, the Gospel of RuPaul, or I don't think it was necessarily him that said this, but every 7 years there's like a shift in like your personal sort of universe. I'm like fudging it up, but, and I feel like that makes perfect sense because 28 was a big year for me as far as like I moved home from New York City back to Pittsburgh and everything else too. What were you studying or what did you study that you're kind of second guessing or thinking you might go in a different direction?
I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
I went to law school.
Awesome.
Sat for the bar and everything. And
then
started getting a little jaded with the environment and just the job hunt.
Of course.
My situation is kind of weird because I'm a lawyer in the U.S., but I'm not a resident or anything, so getting a job there is a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah.
And then getting a job for something around here, it's very competitive, and it's mostly organizations that don't really have that much money to hire, and it's a lot of politicking and stuff like that, which is very frustrating, even though the subject matter is something I really like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess it's now that I don't know if it's because I'm close to turning 30 or what.
Sure.
It's not. I used to do it more like I moved chasing the school or the job or something, and now I'm kind of tired of doing that, and I'd rather settle down in a place where I'm comfortable and then figuring it out from there. Because there's more things that I can do than just be a lawyer or do politics or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think the Netherlands is where you'll settle down, or do you think you're still kind of deciding where that place is? Is it somewhere new, or is it back to Argentina or the States, or?
It's certainly not Argentina.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you asked me a year ago, I probably would have tried really hard to go back to the U.S., mm-hmm. but I've been pretty happy here and comfortable, so I think I would, if not the Netherlands, which for now it's looking like it will be the Netherlands.
Yeah.
It will probably be somewhere in Europe for sure.
Nice. So going back to Argentina, tell me about, you know, little young Arturo growing up as a queer boy, finding his way through the world, and how that sort of intertwines with what you watched and listened to or read and the things that you were obsessed with.
So for me, it was kind of, it was an interesting experience because even to this day, South America is very, it's a very conservative place, even though on paper it might not seem like it is.
Sure.
And even if you look at the political situation now, I'm not going to get super political, but just
a few
glimpse, you can see that there's kind of more of a rise of right-wing parties that might not be so open to non-discrimination. So growing up, of course, all just being gay was an easy subject to make a joke out of.
Of course.
The one thing that always was a kind of a highlight for me was when I was growing up, one of the biggest celebrities in Argentina was a trans woman.
Interesting.
Yeah, which I always, and to, I grew up already knowing her, so for me it was pretty natural. But then as I grew up, I noticed how she was, of course, she was famous because she's an amazing dancer.
Okay.
And she, when she first started, she would do a lot of her costumes for theater. Not drag, not like drag or showgirl type of stuff.
Yeah.
She would mostly be, well, showgirl kind of stuff. In big theaters, we have this, these, we call them vedettes, and it's basically a showgirl.
Okay.
Kind of dressed with the feathers and just,
yeah,
like a lot of sparkling things.
Yeah.
So she would do a lot of that. But then once I grew up and started understanding more, I would see how she was even a subject of a lot of jokes and just the,
yeah,
like the obvious points to go to for the easy joke.
Sure.
So I started understanding that more. So for me growing up, it was kind of, I just didn't even notice that I went into survival mode and just suppressed it completely.
Yeah, it's interesting how you just kind of adapt. You know,
yeah,
it's not even a, no one teaches you how to edit yourself. You just sort of do it, which I think is,
yeah,
fascinating. It's just, yeah, it's survival. Like, was school easy for you? Like, were you out, like, after, you know, like, or out in college, or did you come out a little bit earlier than that?
No, I came out when I was 22.
Okay, nice.
So I was in my third year of college.
Okay.
In the spring. So yeah, no, it was way. So for me, I was kind of a loner in school. I had a very small group of friends.
Sure.
People messing with me wasn't much of an issue, mostly because I was just significantly bigger than everyone else,
yeah,
both in size and in height.
Yeah.
And because I was more of a quiet person, I didn't really talk. A lot of my classmates would later tell me, like, they just assumed that I was very aggressive.
Wow, that's interesting.
They just would stay away from me in fear that I would just stand up and punch them in the face.
Wow.
And that was just really interesting to know, but at the same time, I kind of see it as a blessing in disguise because it did allow me to not have to deal with,
yeah,
like, potential issues that might have come, because I know that if I'd come out earlier, it would have been hell. And I guess that's why I kind of went into the survival mode.
Yeah.
Where even if I thought about being gay, or if I had any of those feelings,
mm-hmm,
I would kind of, it was kind of like a cognitive dissociation, because I knew I had them, but I didn't associate them with me being gay. It was more just like, oh, sure. Like, it crossed my mind.
Yeah, it's there, and I'm aware of it. Hello, but not ready for this,
yeah,
yet. Yeah. So in those 7 years, you're now 29. How has that journey been, like, post coming out? You know, from when you first came out to present day, how are you?
It's been great.
Yeah.
It's been a roller coaster. Like,
of course.
I would say first 2 years, the first year and a half was kind of a mess.
Sure.
But again, it was kind of, I think it was more just me coping with the fact that I was now living as an openly gay man, and
mm-hmm,
that I didn't really have to hide anymore, or just, yeah, just kind of acknowledge my feelings as my own,
mm-hmm,
and as my reality. And it's still in points that it was hard to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was hard to handle or that I didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So that first year and a half was kind of rough at points.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually it got a lot better, and I started developing this sense of, I don't really need to explain anything to anyone. I don't know anyone in the explanations.
Yeah.
And me coming out was my choice, and I didn't do it because I needed to. And I decided to tell people, not because I felt like I needed to.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say, I don't think it was necessarily a difficult thing. It's just that I didn't know how to deal with it, which is,
yeah,
so interesting. Like, that's a really, unique twist on that, because, you know, our emotional intelligence as, you know, gay men, or and just humans too, it's dependent on your upbringing, it's depending on a lot of different things, but sometimes you just don't have those tools. I didn't for like the longest time. Like, it took me almost 10 years to kind of reconcile with myself and my family, and like, I was out but I wasn't out. And that was,
when
like,
did you come out?
I came out when I was 19, so and around like your age right now is when I kind of started, you know, taking ownership of that, I guess is the easiest way to say it. But yeah, it's tough, and most of the time you go through it alone. But did you have a support system? Did you have like close friend, like your chosen family, as RuPaul would say?
Yeah, so it was really funny because I was kind of a loner for my first years in college, and then because I did a lot of community service, and that's how I decided to rush a fraternity on my third year. That was community service oriented, and it was co-ed.
Yeah.
And once I started pledging that semester, that environment kind of gave me a lot of encouragement to come out. I hadn't told anyone about it, but just there were a lot of gay guys in that fraternity, and they were just super open about it and super happy. And I would just see it from the silence and be like, okay, I can see myself just like being able to be open in an environment where people already are, and I don't see any of them having any issues, at least with having the rest of the people in the fraternity rejecting them or having an issue or looking at them a certain way. So that kind of encouraged me, and that's why I said it wasn't necessarily hard. It was just that I didn't know how to deal with it, because everyone was so supportive and so encouraging once I did it.
That's great.
But then I had like 22 years of not really talking about my feelings or anything related to that.
Of course.
So it was just like, it's me that's still kind of navigating the waters of dealing with my feelings outwardly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that, because I wasn't anymore in an environment where I wasn't encouraged to speak my mind or speak my feelings. The whole contrary, I was in an environment where people would talk about it a lot, and they were so open and encouraging.
That's amazing.
It was kind of like a culture shock, to put it in a way.
Yeah, and in the best way possible. It's so almost ironic that a fraternity was your safe haven, because I think a fraternity, and not all fraternities, clearly, but, you know, this sort of like masculinity that, you know, bros, so to speak, and not really encouraging, or, you know, being that sort of guiding light for you after you come out, to for that to be a space for you, which is so cool. Did you have just kind of tying this back into like entertainment and movies or music, do you have like, I feel like music was a big one for me in like college. Do you have any like divas that you love, or just specific bands or singers, or
do you
yes, tell us.
So probably my favorite band ever is Blondie.
Ooh, nice. Great choice.
Yeah, I think it was like 2002 or 2003.
Okay.
They randomly came to Argentina.
Wow.
And I was driving in a car, and I was like, oh my God, Blondie's coming. Of course, I'd heard One Way or Another, Hanging on the Telephone, all the old songs.
Yeah.
And my aunt, she was just like, I'll take you.
Wow.
So I was like this 13-year-old just going to a Blondie concert, and that's kind of where I fell in love with it. But I'd been, again, because I'm an only child.
Okay.
So I spent most of my time just on my computer or watching TV or playing video games. So that was kind of my escape from just being, because in growing up, I described myself always as kind of a shell of a person for a lot of time, and so that was kind of my escape. And so I would watch a lot of videos back when MTV had music videos.
Oh yeah.
And I would just write down the bands that I liked, and then I would go to the record store and just go band by band and start getting CDs.
Yeah.
The first CD that I ever got was Version 2.0 by Garbage.
Nice. Great.
And that's how it kind of started. I started listening to a lot of grunge and alternative rock, and then I kind of had a turn. My first, I would say my ultimate diva, because she's the first one that I ever started listening to seriously, is Sheryl Crow.
Wow, Sheryl Crow. I love that.
Yeah. I started listening to her by the time around If It Makes You Happy came out. So okay. I was really young, but the video was everywhere.
Nice.
And that's the one that I've been in, even through when she was kind of more of the rocky one, and now she's more country and bluegrassy, and still yeah. kind of obsessed with her. Of course, Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, man. They're coming out with a Broadway show called Jagged Little Pill. Yeah, and it's all Alanis Moore. I think it's called Jagged Little Pill, but it's basically that album. I could be yeah. fumbling with this, but it's I think one of our squirrel friends from Squirrel Friends Cocktail Hour, Ms. Zoe Cassay, she saw it in Boston, and she said it was amazing. Or at least the chick that was playing the Alanis part was killer. So, but yeah, that's definitely an album for me. It's interesting that you say, like, you know, the sort of alternative grunge sort of thing is where you started, because I almost kind of, believe it or not, because I don't look like an alternative or grunge sort of guy, I remember the first CD I ever bought was the Americana by The Offspring, and because I just thought it was cool, you know what I yeah. mean? Like, I didn't know any better. I was, like, in middle school, and I was just like, I guess I gotta buy this, and I did like it, but it wasn't like, and then, like, a couple years later, I started, like, finding out who, like, Andrew Lloyd Webber was, and then, like, some of the Broadway divas. It's like, did you have a period like that, or is it still grunge, alternative, sort of, or is it now more eclectic?
Really. Mm-hmm. It just kind of started evolving now. After a while, I started getting a lot into metal.
Wow. Okay.
And through metal, there was this one band called Nightwish.
Okay.
They're Finnish, and the singer is an opera singer, or used to be.
No way.
Yeah, so, and I just started delving into this world of female-fronted metal bands with classically trained singers.
That's kind of cool. I love that.
Yeah, and that led me to Sarah Brightman.
Okay, of course.
And that's how I started with musicals.
Okay.
Because I'd heard of The Phantom of the Opera, but I didn't know the story behind it.
Yeah.
So once I kind of delved into it and saw who Sarah Brightman was, I really got into her, and through her I started getting to more of musicals and stuff like that.
Awesome.
But I'm not super knowledgeable. I know the basics.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not going to throw any shade. No, I feel that that's interesting and kind of unique in that way too, that you do have, it's not all like Barbara, Liza, Patty, you know, all that too. Not that you wouldn't be opposed, it's just like you haven't gone there yet. You mentioned a lot of MTV. What other, like, TV shows did you watch when you were younger, or even in college? Because I feel that was also a big escape for me as well, too. The binge watch era of everything, too. But, yeah, what did you watch? What were you into?
I really liked Gilmore Girls.
Nice.
I really liked it because I related a lot to Lorelai. I don't know if you watched this, if you've ever seen the show.
You know what? Yeah, I've only seen, I'd have to say, grand total of like 5 or 6 episodes. I do like okay. it, but but tell me. She's a lawyer. Yes, no, she went for law or some.
No, she like studied business. She ran it in.
Okay.
But it was more her personality and how she would always throw out references to things.
Got it.
And that's what really attracted me to it.
Yeah.
Which is funny because at least as far as I know, that's a big criticism of the show and how they talk all the time and just don't stop talking reference.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just felt super attracted to that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that I am a little bit.
Sure.
Now it's kind of hard living here because no one gets any of the references that I'm doing.
Ugh, that's such a crime. Just, yeah.
I know. Like, the few of my American friends who live here are not very pop culture savvy.
Oh, man.
So it's just like, so I'll talk about, yeah, so I'll make some weird reference and they'll just be like, I don't know what that means.
Because I said this is kind of like the thesis statement for the Bad Gay Podcast is like, there's nothing like finding that person when you do throw out a reference and you're like, yep, I know what you're selling here, and I'm buying it. Yeah, it's a great sort of litmus test for meeting new people and possibly new friends too. It's great. What other TV shows? What TV shows are you into right now, or any other TV shows in the past? Are you watching stuff on like Netflix or Hulu or anything?
Yeah. So the big TV show that really marked me growing up was Desperate Housewives.
No way! Awesome. You lived for it.
I had all the DVD sets, the video games. It was terrible, but I still played it all the time.
A video game?
Yeah, it had a video game that was kind of like The Sims-ish.
Oh my god, and it was a Desperate Housewives video game.
Yeah,
it was horrible. Like, I didn't even know that existed. Yeah.
They could only get like a few of the actresses to do the voices.
Of course,
they had to get like someone else. The likeness was not at all. It was super bootleg. But I just was like, this is the Desperate Housewives world. I can be a part of it in the video game. I'm going to do it. I was just that into the show.
Of course, yeah.
And then once I moved to college, that was around the time that Drag Race came out.
Oh, yes.
So I remember it was home from one of my breaks when they were airing season 2 in Latin America and VH1. And that's the first time I saw it. And then I got back, and this was back in the day when it was still on Netflix.
Oh, I know. God bless. Those were the days.
I started watching it then, and I was like, what is this? I'd seen RuPaul before in Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh my gosh. Deep cut. I love that.
Yeah. So, and I remember even then, once I saw Ru on Drag Race and remembered him from Sabrina, I remember my reaction to seeing him in Sabrina and just not being able to understand him in and out of drag. Because he goes in and out of drag in that episode.
Yeah.
And I was so confused.
Yeah, right?
But at the same time, so... it just called my attention and I couldn't stop thinking about it, but I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just always just... that even... it's like... an instant in a TV show, but it still makes me think a lot about how even if I wanted to ask someone about that, it would have been something that I would have never dared ask when I was watching Sabrina as a kid.
Yeah.
And just like asking, but like, wait, is that a man or a woman? What is happening?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this? Why do I feel, not that I identify, but
drawn to it. So yeah.
Fascinating.
And, yeah.
Just want to see it and understand it.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And then once I caught on Drag Race and kind of made that association, it was a done deal.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I remember when we first started watching Amanda and I in New York, it was season 4, and we just were flipping through channels. And I remember there's this sort of like, I don't even want to like classify it as like fear or like apprehension or just tentativeness, I guess, to like really fully invest in the show. I was just like, what is this sort of like I'm very along the lines. And then like, but once you're in, like I've never met anyone who I've introduced to Drag Race 2 that just is like, no, I don't really like this. And if they do, I'm just like, okay, we need to reevaluate some things here. But yeah, there's so much joy that I get from Drag Race. And so, I mean, just kind of to talk more about Drag Race, because that, of course, my other podcast, it's the other part of my life, really, that I've dedicated. What's your favorite season?
Season 3.
Season 3?
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like that's an unpopular choice, but it is a great season. Man, and I love season 3 as well. And a lot of Latina queens in the top 4. I mean, Yara Sofia, it sucks that she is such a great drag queen. Like, I see her Instagram nowadays, and I'm just like, she needs to kind of be the next one they bring back from All Stars 1, yeah. I guess.
I mean, I still can't.
Or Nina.
Watch the Moneyball episode. I can't do it.
It's tough, right?
It's I can't.
Yeah.
It's so rough to watch, especially because Yara was one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, so just to fill anyone in who hasn't watched Drag Race, if you haven't, what's wrong with you? But Yara Sofia, famously, you know, it was the top 4 going into the top 3, lip syncing against Alexis Mateo, and she just kind of had a kind of a breakdown, I guess that's the best way to call it. Like during the lip sync, she could not go on anymore. It looked like she was like suffocating. It's really hard to watch. And I can only imagine, knowing now what we know about Drag Race behind the scenes, about how they, you know, they sleep deprivation and like there's so much stress and just getting that far. There was a lot of queens in season three too. It's a long ass season because they had a double Shantae and all this other stuff. But
especially because back in the day, you didn't have these like social media queens that a lot of them already go with such a big platform or even such like such big possibilities to get gowns and get work and stuff. Like Yara said it in the season itself, like, I need this because I'm broke.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the background for a lot of the queens, even more so than now, that a lot of them were like not necessarily living in, being able to pay all the bills with drag and being able to do it, everything they wanted to with drag.
Yeah. Yeah, especially someone as talented as her too. Just, it's just about exposure at that point too. And that's why I feel more so than ever that a lot of people are doing drag now, which is great, even in the sense of like, yes, just go do it and express yourself too. But a lot of the queens are, it's tough because like all these drag race queens are, you know, now there are more than 100, you know, season 8 was 100 queens. So, you know, maybe close to 130 now that sort of dominate the clubs, I guess. And the local queens are, they have to fight even harder to get noticed and, you know, get social media presence. But, it's interesting to see the evolution of Drag Race from, like, you cannot compare season 2 and like what's soon to be season 11 or even season 10. And it's a double-edged sword because it goes both ways. It's like this, it's like become this cultural phenomenon, but in ways I miss the old days. I don't know if it's just because I'm just a curmudgeon nowadays, but I you know, it's like they don't make them like they used to, or like in the show was a lot less self-aware of itself. Do you feel that, or do you get just as excited and like do you feel like the love you had for it at the beginning is still alive today, or has it changed for you?
It's definitely changed. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't get as excited anymore mm-hmm. about it.
It's hard to explain though, right? Yeah, it's, how would you put that into words? Like, do you think you've changed, or do you think it's changed and you've not really been on board with how it's changing? I don't know. It's tough, right?
Yeah, I think so, because, I don't know, the first seasons, it was, and that was kind of something that I always go back and forth with Tom and Tiffany.
Yeah.
Just the show started and you needed certain skills to be able to make it through. You needed to be good on stage. You needed to be able to do hair, do makeup, make costumes.
Yeah.
Like, read. The skills that they started requiring from queens when the show started, I don't necessarily, at least from an outsider perspective, those skills are not necessarily the basic tool set anymore for a lot of drag queens that are now in the mainstream or having the most exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But so at some point I see some sort of disconnect between the thing that attracted me to Drag Race in the first place and what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Which is more, it's a lot more self-aware. It's a lot more about branding. It's a lot about what big names you can get in and how big you can make your name afterwards.
Yeah, it's...
And I don't know, that's, at least to me, that's something that kind of took away from what I really enjoyed from the show.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think with that, with both of what Arturo and I are saying too, I still love the show. Like, and even just last week, Amanda and I sort of made this announcement of, you know, we're still going to cover Drag Race, but not as in depth, and kind of having the same conversation we're having now, that our love for the show is still there. It's not as like, there was like a deep fiery passion, you know, that kind of, I really haven't felt since like All Stars 2, I guess. But that's not to say that the show is not important and it's not changed my Absolutely life not. And has, you know, it really has. It's like altered, not even just in the sake of the podcast too. Like I wouldn't have a podcast if it wasn't because of that show too, but it really brings a lot of light and joy to people. And yes, there's the drama and people love the drama and all that stuff too. But it's doing something that not all reality shows can do or have done, but I feel like it's getting to be in this like little box, this sort of like perfect corporate VH1 box, like,
yeah.
And it's not as rough around the edges, and it's not, it's almost like a metaphor for drag itself, because RuPaul said many times, drag is never going to be mainstream, because it's too, like, it's a subculture, it's underground, and it's kind of happening, you know, a little, which is also great, and I'm not even saying that that's a bad thing. It's just really fascinating to see, and exciting, and weird, and I think I just want that part of Drag Race that was mine, you know. I think back in the day when I felt ownership over the show, and it gave me what I needed, and now it still gives me what I need, just kind of in a different way, and I've evolved too. Do you feel the same? Is it like, or is it also?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, things, people change, and the show changes, of course, and I think that just having started watching the show from earlier seasons, you kind of maybe, again, you get hooked on the show for different reasons than someone who might get hooked on the show now. But at the same time, what attracted you to the show back in the day is what's attracting a lot of young people now to the show, to how it is now. And so I think about it, and it's, there might not necessarily be doing many of the things that initially attracted me to the show, but that doesn't mean that. So it's more like the platform's still there. It's just changing because things change.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
People change and audiences change. And at the end of the day, it's still a big platform for queer people to express their art. And more importantly, you have, again, you see all these kids just being full on to Drag Race when they're not even like 15 years old or even younger. And so, yes, it's changed, and a lot of it changed, and my feelings toward it have changed, but that doesn't mean that the value that I think the show has has changed necessarily.
Yeah, I think throughout this conversation, at least what Amanda and I were trying to say, although we've got some emails, that we weren't trying to be, you know, cynical or unappreciative of what the show has done for us, especially the podcast too. Like I said, no RuPaul's Drag Race, no Squirrel Friends Cocktail Hour. It's just really, especially doing it through a podcast lens and like dissecting every single moment of each episode too. Taking a step back for us is going to be a good way to kind of reevaluate and just start watching it as like a real fan again too. I think it'll do us a world of good. And that was kind of the conversation that Amanda and I had, and hope to like intend to sort of implicate as we move forward as well too. But I still love it, my god, it is the best show on television, and I wish more of my friends watch it. I always, you know, like, so many people want to listen to the podcast, but it doesn't make sense. It will make sense to an extent, but you know, a recap podcast, you kind of have to watch the show. And I've only really recruited like 2 friends. It's hard, it's like a hard sell, and I wish it wasn't. It's another show to get into, but so who are your favorite queens if we were to do a top 5? You could do more if you want, but
okay.
I find it's always interesting. You could tell a lot about a person through their favorite queens.
Yeah. So my favorite queen ever is Alyssa Edwards.
Of course. Always and forever. Yeah.
Always and forever. She's crazy. Ever since season 5, I've just been fixated on her, and yeah.
Uh-huh.
Second favorite queen, Rasha, for sure.
Awesome.
I really like Willem, Bianca Del Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of, I would have to say Monet Exchange.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Yeah, I was looking at your Twitter profile. Monet. Was it your Twitter profile that had the banner of Monet in the back? Was that you?
Yeah, it's from the show that she does for WOW.
Okay, got the Monet Exposé. Is that her own thing?
She has on World Plus. Okay. She has a show called Herstory Exchange or something like that.
Oh, that's cute. I like that.
So she kind of explains like historical times, like Monet style, and she's just talking about the founding fathers.
I love that.
And in the edit, she just kind of pops up. And I don't remember what she's saying, and it was just hilarious.
Fabulous.
The faces that she was making, like, this is funny as fuck.
Okay, so here comes the big question. What do you think of the tie? The All-Stars 4 tie between Monet and Trinity.
Ugh.
It's a complicated question, right?
Yeah, I mean, I take it all back to All-Stars 3.
Same. If Shangela just would have won, no one would be... keep going. Sorry, I'm interrupting you. Yeah, I get fired up.
No, it's fine, because I do think that it all ended up... I think the idea was for Shangela to win season 3.
Yeah.
And they fucked it up with that jury
thing. Yeah.
So, between Kennedy and Trixie, Trixie made sense for the win, because with Kennedy's track record, her win would have never been justified.
Yeah.
But, so, now All-Stars 4 came around, and even though I do think that Monet and Trinity had a pretty good run both.
Yeah.
And if we were to judge by the last episode, and I don't remember who was, which, like, I listened to a bunch of Drag Race podcasts.
Yeah, that's right.
But one of them was talking, like, if we took the last episode as a challenge, I think it was Race Chaser.
Yeah, or All Right Mary, I can't remember. Yeah, but yeah, go ahead.
And they were like, if we take the last episode as a challenge, I agree that Monet would have taken that.
Yes.
The last episode.
Same.
And that would have put Monet and Trinity pretty much neck and neck with the amount of wins and stuff.
Yeah.
But I still think that the production, RuPaul, whatever you want to call it, I think their winner was Trinity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they couldn't just crown Trinity. And I don't know. Because it was also in Race Chaser that they were saying that they didn't air conversations they had with the three All-Stars. So Chad, Alaska, and Trixie, they all talked with the top four. And apparently it came up in those conversations in the one-on-ones, the issue of race and the race of the winners.
Yeah.
Which that didn't make the final cut. And that's why I think that they just wouldn't only crown Trinity.
Yeah.
And where the idea for the tie came, I don't really know. But at the same time, if they had just crowned Monet, knowing how racist the fan base can get.
It's so shitty. Yeah, it's like a lose-lose almost.
Yeah, it was like... And I mean, as far as I've read, she's still getting a lot of shit.
I can't believe that. It's been like, I guess it's only been like a week.
Yeah.
Yikes. I don't read any of that shit. I refuse to like put any energy into that. But it is a real problem within the drag, because the Drag Race, and that's another thing too, Drag Race fans are rabid. They are very enthusiastic. And like, even going to DragCon, I've been to DragCon LA and New York, and just seeing, like, I love the show, but there are people that love the show. And that's with any, you know, fandom, you know, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, whatever it is, you know, Marvel Comics. It's just really, like, as Alyssa Edwards says, it's just drag. It's just drag. But also, I think All Right Mary was saying this, that we're delving into this, like, sort of sports culture, this fanatic. You know, people burn couches on streets after, like, football games, and people get into fist fights. And soccer, yeah.
In Argentina, like, we've had murders over soccer matches.
That's crazy.
It's, like, I remember being young, and I just saw this in the news, because it just shocked me so much. There was, like, soccer teams in Argentina have these sections of people that go to see that are very new, kind of, they're very traditional and everyone knows them, and it's an aggressive group. They tend to always fight in matches and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're usually headed by one or two people, and there's historic rivalries between teams. And there was this clash between the fan groups of two rival teams, and basically one of the leaders of one sent his people, and they went and killed the family of one of the others. Not him, but his wife and two daughters.
very like mafia style, like don't kill him, kill the people that he loves. Yeah,
it absolutely is. Like, we had, there was a tournament. I know, again, I'm kind of going over this because I don't do sports.
Yeah, same. How do we get here? But that's okay.
So you kind of follow it.
Yeah.
And there was a final for a tournament or something like that was happening in Buenos Aires, and they had to suspend it because as one of the teams was coming in, the fans of the other team started throwing rocks at the bus and tear gas and bricks. So much so that even though both teams were Argentinian, the match got suspended that time, and they ended up having to go to Spain to play.
Wow. I think like the equivalent of that, like not as violent, like the Twitterverse, you know, or any social media, like they're verbal rocks, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's all we kind of have in that sort of arena is our words. And it's crazy, like the entitlement that these people feel that they have to, like, yeah, of course, voice your, I don't know. I've never been associated with that kind of behavior, and I just can't imagine getting fired up over something. Yeah, granted, I have a podcast and we talk, but we never go there, you know? Like, I would never say, I hope Monet exchanged, like, her career ends, or she, you know, death threats, all this other stuff, like...
That's crazy.
Over the color of her skin is just, it's... I feel that, like, as the queer community, we're better than that, but clearly it's not the case, and we have such a long way to go, and... It's really disheartening because both of them are so talented. And like, I think that I was more upset that they both just kind of won. I was like, all right. Yeah. I was just like, it seems like a lot of buildup. That was my thing. I was like, ooh, because Monet like peaked at the right time and Trinity had all this story of 15 years of drag or whatever. Like, I was, and Keon, my boyfriend, was like, he didn't say I hope, but he's like, what if they both won? And then he did, they did, and he was like, oh, but even still, like, it's also fine, and they should also be celebrated, and...
Yeah, I mean, it's the outcome of a TV show at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, you might be disappointed with it, but at the end of the day, you still have two really talented queens that just won a prize for doing great work.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think it's two separate things. Like, yeah, I'm entitled to have my feelings towards the TV show. And like, oh, well, that happened.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I can't be like, okay, well, still, I'm really happy for both of them because they both really wanted it and they both got it. And it's about them winning. It's not about me not being excited because both of them won on a TV show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because they did the same sort of pattern with All Stars 3. They started season 10 the next week, and now they have a break this week, but now they're starting season 11. It's just like, we know that was crazy. Yeah, it is exhausting, but it's also like a great way to sort of, you know, okay, Monet and Trinity won and there's a little bit of controversy. Here's season 11. Like, focus on this now. It's a good strategy. But yeah, I think Shangela should have won. I'm not mad at Trixie for winning. I really like her a lot. I was just mad at that stupid jury. But I like lie awake in bed at night thinking of like, why Shangela? Like, I can't fathom it. It just seems crazy because she's such drag race royalty. So, but you can't change the past, Arto. You can only move forward. I want to wrap up here, but I want, of course, want to talk about the Oscars a bit, and mainly Glenn Close. We talked a little bit off mic. I mean, I'm so glad that you were on the right side of history, and hoping that she wins. And were you able to watch the Golden Globes when she won?
No, I have not watched it yet.
Okay, that's all right.
I kind of been following it. I mostly followed it through you, Amanda.
Okay, great.
That was like my main source of information.
Yeah, we're on Glenn Watch.
Before I kind of went on online to do it, but I mean, talk about it being fucking time. I thought it was time when Julianne Moore won. I was like, I thought that was overdue.
Yeah, oh my god, the Annette Bennings of the world, the, you know, the Glenn Close, like, I'm always more concerned about the ladies. I don't care if Leonardo DiCaprio has an Oscar or not, but like, there's probably a few more that I'm missing off the top of my head too. Even I mean, I'll throw Helena Bonham Carter in there. Like, it's those people that, like, have been nominated before. Amy Adams, even. I know she's not technically, like, a lady, but she's been nominated, like, at least six times. I'm just going to throw that number out. I'll look it up as we talk. Yeah, right. But okay, so neither of us have seen The Wife. You have seen A Star Is Born.
I have, yeah.
Okay. And were you impressed by Lady Gaga / when you walked out, you were like, she's going to win the Oscar. There's no competition. How did you feel?
I really liked her in A Star Is Born. I thought she was really good. I don't know if I knew, but I was pretty sure she would get nominated.
Of course, yeah.
Because it was like, there's something about her on screen that kind of gets to me. I don't know, because like, when I saw her in American Horror Story, I didn't necessarily think she was great.
Yeah.
But I also couldn't just get my eyes off of her whenever she was on screen.
Interesting.
And this coming from someone who doesn't really listen, like, I started listening to Lady Gaga's music after American Horror Story, and I only really like a few songs.
Okay.
So, because I know that a lot of her being there had to do with, she was a huge star by the time she started in American Horror Story.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, and I also put it on myself a little bit, I think I may just undervalued her because I knew where she was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So I may have had my prejudice on her as an actor.
Sure, yeah.
But again, I had this thing where I thought she was good, I didn't think she was anything out of this world, but I was still super focused on her whenever she was on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't she get nominated for a Golden Globe for that?
Yeah, she won a Golden Globe for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when she won, I was like, again, I didn't necessarily think that her performance was that great, but I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And I had that same feeling with A Star Is Born, mm-hmm. even though, by the end of the movie, I was kind of crying every time she would appear on screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of walked away knowing that she was going to get nominated, or having that strong feeling, but not necessarily that she, I've been kind of a mess with movie season and award season.
Same,
this summer.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily think, oh no, she's definitely going to win no competition, but I saw her with the nominees for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Glenn just started getting this momentum, and it started with the Golden Globes, and I like jumped out of my skin because I love, like, I don't dislike Lady Gaga, but I'm just rooting for Glenn. I'm sorry. It's like, you know, Manila saving Latrice, you know, like, yeah. There's just no question. Like, I have to, you know, I love you, Monet, but I'm going to save Latrice. And it's kind of the same deal. Like, I think that it was so great to see that win. I just felt like, I don't know. It was a triumph. I feel like I won. I was so excited, and she was so shocked, because she had no idea what was, you know, going into this award season. Oh, here's another role that I'm nominated for. It's not like, I wouldn't say as dynamic, because it is a very well tempered, sort of internal performance on her part, which is tough to judge. You know, when you see explosive performances like Lady Gaga and all this other stuff. Yeah. But I'm happy for her. I if she doesn't win, I will be really sad. But I'm not going to go tweeting Lady Gaga or anything. But I think she's going to win. I would love to see that. Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah, it's time. # it's time for Glenn. I've been like silently campaigning, or not so silently, on Squirrel Friends, just like letting the world know that we need Glenn to win that Oscar, and I think it's time. But for the Julianne Moores, the Annette Bennings, the Amy Adams, you know, all those other actresses out there, that it's kind of a legacy award to an extent, but I think it's warranted. The gays will rejoice. I think, like, a lot of the older generation, you know, the older voters are also on her side as well too. So
yeah,
it's great. So good luck to you, Glenn. Well, I guess that's it for now. Thank you so much for taking some time out to have a chat with me about some queer content.
Great.
Yes, and thank you for your support, not only on the Bad Gay Pod, but for Squirrel Friends as well. You've been one of our longtime supporters on Twitter, keeping us active and contributing as well. And it's just really nice to have a chat with you. So thank you for being here. And maybe I'll have you on for, because I'm doing music now. I would maybe like to have you on. I think I might have someone for Blondie, but Sheryl Crow would be a great episode.
Or Tori Amos. If you
Tori Amos. Okay. Amos. Yeah, I don't have a Tori Amos yet.
If you want to talk Tori Amos, I can go all day.
Oh, nice. Well, I look forward to that. And yeah, thank you for being here, Arturo.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
So this concludes our very first Bad Gay for a Day episode. Thank you again to Arturo for being our first guest and for your constant support with both of my podcasts. I appreciate it so much. If any of you out there are looking to maybe look into some Patreon stuff, go to patreon.com/badgaypod. You can donate on three different levels if you just want some bonus episodes, or if you want to be a future Bad Gay for a Day guest host, certainly look into it. Check it out. Or at the very least, you can also leave a 5-star review on iTunes. You can leave a review, a positive one, if you feel so inclined. And you can also tell your friends. Word of mouth is such an incredible asset to any podcast success, and I definitely appreciate it. So if people are saying, I need a new podcast, you know, you should suggest the No Good Very Bad Gay with Nick Kachanov. Why not? But once again, thank you to everyone who is continuing to support me as I'm on this hiatus and getting all these music episodes up and running. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate the support and your patience, and I look forward to talking to you all soon. All right, have a good week, everyone, and thanks for listening.